listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 43, and I'm joined, as always, by the co-hosts of the Hometown Losers, and OJ and Adam. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
I'm doing very well. How about you, Adam?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking. Had a great holidays and New Year and everything else. Glad to be back. A lot of action in the sports community, so I'm excited to be back to discuss it with you guys, as always.
Yeah, for sure. This is our first session of the 24 year, as we obviously took a little bit of a break for, Christmas and New Year. And I hope that our listeners had good holidays and were able to spend time with family and the people that are important in their lives, because obviously that's important as well. But so is St. Louis sports. And that's what we're here to talk about. So let's go ahead and dive into it, guys, because we have a lot to talk about here, obviously, since we've been a little bit of a hiatus. Let's go ahead and jump in here and talk a little bit about the Blues. Quick update. They are now 20-18-1 for 41 total points. Since our last session, they went 7-4. They are still sixth in the Central, compared to our last session. They are 17 points behind the Jets. The unfortunate thing about that is that 17 points behind since our last session, which again was a decent bit ago, we were only 11 points behind the Avs in the Central. So the Jets have really been on a streak here.
Yeah, they just won seven in a row.
Yeah, it's like ridiculous. And all of a sudden it's like, where the hell have these Winnipeg Jets been? You know what I mean? It's like, all right, but
feeling good.
Yeah, they are. That's for sure. We are 2 points out of a wild card spot. So not terrible, but we have moved back a little bit. Last session, we were only 1 point out. So it's a plus one in that aspect. We are 11th in the West, and we are 17 points behind the Jets, which is actually an improvement compared to what it was before. We were 18 points last session behind the Golden Knights, and we were also in 12th position in the West, so we moved up to 11th. We are 23rd in the NHL, which is even from the last session, and yet again, the Jets lead the NHL, so we're 17 points behind them, and just like last session too, we were 18 points behind the Golden Knights. So obviously that's a 1 point improvement to that. So I guess the question that we have to ask, like, right away, has Bannister done something here? Like, is Bannister going to go on a run? Is this kind of like, not to put a label on it and to put it in the same box, but it's just kind of like a Craig Berube situation. You know, Adam, what's your thoughts? Yeah. Here? Do you think that, Bannister's done enough to help this team?
I wouldn't go that far. I don't think it's 2019 quite yet. I mean, I have been seeing some improvements, certainly under Bannister. You know, he's definitely been emphasizing, more competitive play and some of his defense strategies for sure. And some of his more recent focuses have been like on tightening our defense habits and goaltending. And I think that has certainly contributed to some of our success. Also, one thing that we were lacking too is confidence. And I think that our confidence is certainly growing some, because it has been evident, in some more recent games with closer scores as well. And also some better, defensive performances. Obviously, with Falk being out, it looked like Kessel stepping up in his absence certainly has been noteworthy for sure. Overall, I think he's made somewhat of a positive impact. He has from my opinion, he has a lot of coaching experience and also experience as a player. I was just looking him up and he's been, he basically played in the NHL for four teams from 96 to 2002. He won a Memorial Cup back in the day. He also coached in Europe for a while for several teams, won a championship over Germany in 2008. He coached a lot of our current players as well, such as Bennington, Kyrou, Blay, Neighbors, etc.
Yeah,
the HL level for sure, and Springfield. So, I think he has. I think he's really well known for being very structured, and he's a very disciplined coach. And so, I think that definitely grabs some of his players' attention for sure. And he also has a reputation for being demanding, but he's usually pretty fair as well. So overall, he has a pretty good relationship, I think, with all of his players and staff. And I've even been hearing that, you know, some former players have even praised him for his leadership and communication skills for sure. So only time will tell, but I'm overall optimistic.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like Berube, right? When you talk about that, and like, again, he's demanding but fair, talks to players in a very real level. But yeah, again, as you said, you know, Adam, it doesn't feel like 19 just yet, right?
No, not yet. So, we're not there.
Yeah. All right. OJ, what's your thoughts on Bannister's performance so far as the head coach of the Blues?
I mean, I think he's been fine. I mean, he seems to, they're doing well, doing better than when he was, when he took over. So, I mean, you got the new coach bump still going on potentially, but I mean, they're still playing pretty well tonight. I mean, you probably should be tailing off by now. So some of the, you know, eventually the results are going to be real, and it's looking, it's starting to look like maybe, I honestly think it's more that the Blues weren't necessarily buying into Berube as much for whatever reason, certain ones of the players, because I don't know that they've adjusted their defensive strategy. I know Berube was trying to preach the house thing still. So that, as far as I know, is the same. It just seems like they're executing things better for whatever reason. Let's see. I do think they tried he's trying some stuff on the power play. Like, I think they put Colton Parayko up on the power play or something like that. Somewhere. So he's kind of – he has been tinkering, and I think him coming in with some fresh eyes – no prior loyalties or no prior promises to players or anything like that. You know, it lets him kind of be free and have a easier time accurately evaluating where things stand with certain guys. And I think it's helped him deploy the team in a little better way too. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I also don't think this is a Stanley Cup champion. He's not, doesn't have that. Like, the thing is, I watched every game that year because I had a feeling from the beginning of the season that this team is good. And even when they're losing, I'm like, they're too good. This roster's way too good to be this bad. And I just kept watching because I felt like something good could happen every night. It doesn't right. feel
and
like.
Just like a clarification, OJ, you're referring to the 2019 year, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I did miss a game or two while I was on a cruise, but that's it. So, I mean, I really saw that whole thing, but I don't feel that way with this roster. They don't give me the same feeling where it's like every night you're like, oh, I feel like tonight could be the night they turn around. You know, it's more just like waiting for shit to fall apart. So, you know.
Yeah, and I'm very much with you, OJ. When you look at the 2019 season, especially when you look at that roster, you're just like, to your point, they're way too good to be losing like this, right? And obviously, I don't feel like we're going to have another Play Gloria moment where the team comes together, they rattle off 11 wins in a row, and really just start pushing. I don't think that we have the talent, and nor do we have the leadership, and we don't have the experience either. Obviously, this is a much younger team now. Compared to like playoff experience and stuff like that, you know, in my opinion, I think Bannister's done an okay job, but listen, 7-4 is not necessarily bad in the NHL, but here's the reality of the situation. We've been spinning our wheels, right? I mean, we lost ground technically in the playoff and division races in that time frame. I get it that Winnipeg has gone off and done ridiculous things, but we're still, again, like seven and four is almost feels like a kind of like a 500 team, right? Even though it's really not, and that's not really putting in the right perspective, but it's only three games above 500. So it's not like we're really making any progress at all.
I'll tell you right now, if you could tell me right now that we would win at a seven wins to four losses rate the rest of the season, I would take that, because that would actually kind of putting us well in the spot by the time the end of the season. So, I mean, to me, they've done a good job. It's just kind of too early to really draw conclusions on how much is organically from Bannister and how much of it is just the fact that, you know, these guys, how much of it is the coach ball?
Right. I mean, and to your point, you know, going 7-4, right? So, I mean, what, that's only going to give you plus 12 games more on a win to loss ratio. So I'm not terribly too certain that's really going to put us in a playoff spot, if I'm being honest at this point. Who knows, right?
If I could chime
in. It would be
fun, Adam, yeah. I just wanted to chime in real quick. One thing. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in real quick and just add the fact is the scoring that I've been seeing is that we're much – I mean, not that it matters at the end of the day for sure, but it, at the same time, you know, basically whenever – you know, wins and losses for sure. But overall, the performance of the team, what I've been seeing is a much closer game per se. Yeah. We're not getting blown out. I mean, other than, okay, yeah, against Florida on Tuesday, but that's against Florida. They're on fire, you know. The Panthers – I wasn't expecting that we were going to beat the Panthers, considering we actually did near Christmas, but still. Overall, I think we've been putting up a hell of a showing in the past, you know, month or so. Overall, I would say it's much closer in those games that we are losing.
And you're 100% right to that aspect, right? But you also brought up the point that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. A loss is a loss,
it
right?
It's a step in the right 100%. Direction.
Listen,
I'm not saying a 180 and saying everything's going to change. It's 2019 all over again. We go from a losing record and then immediately we're on this hot streak and we're winning, you know, 10, 15 games in a row. I'm not expecting that, but at least I am seeing improvements. So at least I think we're heading in the right direction, I guess, is the point I wanted to chime in there real quick with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm definitely not saying that, you know, Bannister hasn't done a good job or that, you know, the Blues are, you know, a dumpster fire by any stretch of the means. But it's more for the fact that, again, like, you know, the 7-4 is not bad, but it's just unfortunate that the Blues are, I feel like we're just kind of like spinning our wheels and we're going to be like hovering right around where we're at. And maybe a wild card spot if we're lucky. But hopefully we can turn it up. But to what OJ's point earlier, you're just kind of
past this stretch, right? Is what you're talking about. Like, you're not saying just over that stretch.
Correct. Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm talking about looking for the next 20 games or, 20 games to finish the season. You know what I mean?
We got a lot of hockey left between now and April. So.
Yeah. And again, he could be even better than like a 7-4, right? But it just doesn't necessarily feel like it's going in. I said 20 games, but it's 40 games. My bad. But we do have a lot of hockey left for sure. I mean, they could turn this around. I mean, technically, they have a huge advantage over the 2019 team, right?
And also strength of schedule as well. And also strength of schedule as well. And it looks like overall, it's going to get a little bit easier on us. Certainly some stretches there.
Yeah. Sure.
And but lastly chime in that 7-4 is a 64% win percentage. You know, if you round up to the hundreds place. So you're winning 64% of your games, and then you're getting a point from some of the losses. I don't really know how many you can predict there, but
we only have one overtime loss.
I'm saying is that 7-4 is an excellent, like, it's an excellent record. It's a 636. That's the win percentage on it. Like, that would be near the top of any league in the Western Conference or in either conference. I mean, so.
Yeah, but you're talking about you're talking about from the start of the season. If you look at it the rest of the way, remember, we got a lot of losses. I mean, we're only two games above 500.
And right you're now. Undervaluing. The fact that they went 7-4. That's all. I just think a little too much. That's a pretty good little run. That's all.
Yeah. Again, I'm just trying to put it into perspective as well that, you know, again, in the future, you know, Adam, you brought it up that, you know, it does look like our schedule is going to be a little bit lighter. Hopefully we'll be able to get some wins. And they are definitely playing better hockey. It's just that I'm not terribly too certain that, like, they would be able to keep up this run, or this team feels like a 500 team, you know.
Only time will tell.
They have been in a tough stretch of games here too.
They have been. That's my point is, you know, we were facing the Canucks, we were facing the Panthers, we were facing, you know, the Canes, and we actually beat the Canes, and we actually beat the Canucks. We also beat I think we even beat Florida Stars. We beat the Stars, but we even beat
Yeah, the Panthers. Yeah, we did.
Panthers, we beat them.
His fourth game as a head
coach. Yeah.
Game, though, but yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. So when you look at Bannister, in his first six games, he was 5-1. But in the next five games, he's 3-2, right? So you just hope that's not a trend that's going to continue to happen, if that it's makes just, sense. You know what I mean?
3-1. They're up 3-1 on the Rangers right now. So
yeah.
It's good. And the Rangers are decent.
And the too. Rangers are in first place in the Metro Division.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
So and they're at, and they just beat the Canes, and they're second in the Metro. So.
And there's not like some wild disparity in shots, and the Blues just happen to score. Like it's pretty even
right.
matched as and, far as shot total.
And they just beat the Canucks, who were number one in the Pacific. So these are teams that are legitimately tough teams, and we actually showed up and beat them. So
they don't see
the question.
That's the thing. That's the other thing. Eventually, teams will start seeing us coming too, and then we might.
Yeah, that is true too. Yeah.
We lost to the Avs, which they were second in Central, obviously. But yeah, overall, we had a pretty tough schedule. We had a really tough schedule. We're facing a lot of number one and two teams there, for, like back to back to back. A lot of them are.
Yeah.
Well, also too, the Central is actually pretty strong this year.
It really is. Yeah. Considered. Yeah.
So, dude, we're just like talking ourselves into them now.
Right?
Like, yeah, I don't know if they're really that good. Like, you know what? They're actually pretty good.
I mean, I'm not saying play Gloria yet, but I'm just saying overall, I've been seeing an improvement, especially looking at this schedule. I mean, it's a tough schedule right now, the past 10 games or so. You know, granted, there were a couple games, you know, like we should have won that game against the Penguins, no doubt. But, you know.
Yeah.
But we're doing very good against teams that are, you know, like at the top of the, you know, top of their division. Yeah. So overall.
Jordan Walker's at the Blues game. Just so you guys know, they just showed him on there clapping.
Is he?
Yep. Where's Blues?
There you go.
So,
nice. Well, speaking of the Cardinals, that's the next topic that we have here. and there's not a whole heck of a lot to really talk about, but I do want to talk about the new hiring that we have with is it Chaim Bloom or Chaim?
Yeah, I think
Chaim.
Chaim.
Chaim Bloom.
What is it?
Chaim. It's literally Chaim. It's like the end of.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's
wow. I did not. I know he's Jewish, but I didn't know Chaim Bloom.
Yeah. Right. No, I had to look that up too. It means like life in Hebrew.
Why doesn't he just go by? I mean, no, if I'm not trying to offend anybody, but his middle name's David. I'm just going to call him David.
Well, probably I don't know where he's from, but you know, certain places.
Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, apparently.
I don't know. I was going to say if it was New York, I'd be like, probably most people there know how to pronounce it naturally. But
yeah, we don't. We'll just call him Blom or Bloom or whatever. Bloom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. So go ahead. Go about that.
So a little bit about him in his background here before we get to like just discussing Bloom. He was the senior VP of baseball ops for the Rays between 16 and 19. He was the Red Sox chief baseball op for 4 years. So in that situation, I mean, it's a little bit of different naming conventions that different teams use, but the GM reported to him essentially. He is very well known in Red Sox in Boston. I can tell you, hated him. And the reason why, he let two massive stars get away in Mookie Betts and Xavier Bogaerts. He let them walk. And, you know, Boston was not very happy about that. I mean, you have two perennial superstars that decide to leave Boston because he's not willing to give them money or that they're not happy there. But mostly, let's be honest, it was mostly about the money. However, in his tenure as well, the Red Sox were 267-262. Five games above 500 over the years that he was there. He was there for 4 years. So the question is, will he help? I mean, he's a special assistant to Mozeliak. You know, OJ, what's your thoughts here on Bloom? I mean, do you believe that he's going to be able to help navigate or help Mozeliak make better decisions? Like, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah. So luckily, I've been kind of bored at work the last few days, so I've been reading up a lot about this and so I actually think it's probably a pretty good pickup, because remember, he's just an advisor. They're not putting him in the GM chair. He's just literally an advisor. But prior to the Red Sox, he came up with the Rays. And remember, he started as an intern. So, like, this dude actually, he wrote for Baseball Prospectus at one point, and then he got hired by the Rays. And then there he wrote the book that they use for, like, drafting and developing pitching that's called mm-hmm. The Rays Way or whatever. So, you know, they all got a copy off the Cardinals. But anyway, he's pretty fucking brilliant, it seems, as far as pitching especially. And that's the area that the Cards need the most help in. And you could also argue that some of the moves they made as far as like some of their Rule 5 selections and stuff like that, and the Kittredge trade and all that kind of stuff, like some of these are guys that Bloom brought on when he was part of the organization or that he drafted. And so it's kind of like that's where that's coming from. As far as his record with the Red Sox, like you said, above 500 in a tough division, but they did finish in last place three times, which is part of the reason the Red Sox fans are so mad. But a lot of what I've read claims that it was a mandate from the Red Sox ownership to cut payroll. So it seems that, and they did, they definitely cut payroll. And so I think it was, what was it? I think they let, do they trade Betts or let him walk? Whichever one it was.
Let him walk.
Okay, so they let Betts walk.
Bogarts definitely walked.
One of them they traded, I'm pretty sure, because one of them they had the package with David Price, who had a massive contract. Then that would have to be Mookie Betts. I think that's why they didn't get as much back for him, because they also wanted to shed Price's terrible contract that Dombrowski gave out. And so they didn't get as much in return for them. It basically, he was hired to do a bunch of unpopular shit, and now he's been fired. So it doesn't mean he's not smart either, because I think part of what they were saying, their objective in hiring him was to help them win sustainably, you know, put quotes around that, basically build up their farm. And that he actually did well on, if you believe like Baseball America farm rankings and shit like that, because basically the Red Sox went from like the worst farm system in the league to one of the top couple by a lot of these ranking sites. So he did build up their farm pretty well, it looks like. So I think he's a smart guy. I think he's has a different perspective from what the Cardinals have had. And I think that if they utilize him properly, then it's a great move. I just, you know, you do wonder if he should maybe not have too much power. Like I'm not necessarily hoping that he's like the guy that's going to take over for Mozeliak when he retires. You know what I mean? But other than that, I really love having the guy's input on stuff. So.
Well, Adam, what's your perspective here on Bloom? I mean, do you think that Mozeliak, do you think this could be, you know, foreshadowing that Mozeliak might be moved? Like, what's your thought process then?
I don't believe so, at least based upon what I remember Mozeliak coming out and describing his role. He said it was more of a part-time role, like an advisory role. And also, he's not relocating to St. Louis either. He's going to be, of course, president of spring training and join the team from home in road games as well. But I don't see this as a move to replace Mozeliak. I honestly see this, from my perspective, as his ability to basically like find himself in between jobs, so to speak. And so landing like an advisory gig, you know, sort of a placeholder for me, you know, for him, honestly, would be ideal. You know, allows him to basically collect a paycheck. He gets to contribute still while he's looking at more than likely finding, you know, a GM or president of operations job somewhere else. You know, I think from a Cardinals perspective, was definitely a strategic move, you know, to bring in some new perspectives into the front office, because let's face it, I'm trying to remember the last time we've had somebody outside of the Cardinals organization brought in. It feels like it's been like 30 years ago, you know. So it'll be interesting to bring in some fresh perspectives, which sometimes, you know, even we all know this from our perspective of our work lives, you need those fresh perspectives from time to time, especially whenever things aren't going well. So, and he's also had a, you know, pretty good, successful background, You know, I think OJ mentioned about, you know, rebuilding some farm systems as well, you know, and obviously navigating some competitive divisions that he's been in out east. So I think there's definitely some optimism that his expertise, you know, would help contribute to our turnaround. But for me, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how his insights and decisions unfold, you know, especially whenever we're trying to shape a more competitive and successful season for us. But I just don't see him being around long term. It's just more of a short term gig, I think, until he lands something bigger.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing for me, in my perspective, you know, he is known for two things. One is, OJ, you already alluded to this, is handling and managing a lower payroll team. Which I really don't like that, because that means that the Cardinals are going to be stagnant where they're at in the payroll for the next like 5 years, right? At least. Now, to your point, Adam, he might not be around that long. Who knows, right? But that's just one thing that kind of like sticks out to me. However, he was very well known and for the Tampa Bay Rays of being able to develop and help develop a pitching program. When I did my research onto him, a lot of people said that he was kind of a guru for keeping young pitching and being able to train them up the correct way, which was obviously what we really need right now. Cardinals have, you know, over the past few years, or I would say the past 10 years, we've had young talent that we've been able to kind of be able to groom or at least trade for, like, you know, Adam Wainwright and stuff like that. But they developed through our system. Chris Carpenter kind of the same way too. But if we can get these guys, you know, LeDrew Rahm and Hank Hence, these other guys that are coming up through the system, and you know, he can help them out, then I'm all for it, right? And then we don't even need to worry about our payroll. Who gives a shit, right, at that point? But that is the only thing that, like, I'm kind of like cautious about, is that he's known to be a low payroll specialist, and you know, he might just my fear is, you know, Goldschmidt contract, we know, is at the is up after this year, right? And he's just going to go to Mozeliak and go, he's not worth it. Well, I think he might be worth it. Just depends, obviously, on the price point, of course. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't want this team to be the Dodgers, where they're going to spend $1 billion on two effing players. But at the same time, they need to be, I think, more competitive and getting and try to get some players here to be able to make deep runs, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and we were promised that payroll would increase, but
yeah,
it's significantly lower than it was in 23.
Front house. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It increased in the front office, but
yeah. But yeah. And so I was really disappointed by that commitment, that it's like over $10 million less than last year.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
So we have plenty of space to add more, but the fact is that they're really getting cheap. And my personal opinion about this is, I don't think we're going to start seeing an impact on them spending more until the fans really stop showing up and stop watching.
Which is not, Mozeliak is literally betting that St. Louis fans, that, you know, baseball heaven, is that strong that they could put out nothing. And I'm not saying that this team is nothing. I'm not saying that. Obviously, you have Nolan Arenado, you have Goldschmidt, you have pieces. I'm not saying this team is nothing, right? But he's just, to me, I feel like he's pushing his chips into the table, saying, you guys are bluffing that you're not going to show up and hurt us in the wallet. That's going to make us go out and reinvest into the team, right? I mean, Adam, to your point, we were there a lot. You and I were there a lot the year that Pujols came back. So obviously not last year.
That was a huge push. Yeah, we had we were there considerably a lot more 2 years ago. Yeah.
And so was thousands and thousands and thousands of Cardinals. Yeah,
they were selling out games.
But what did they And what did they do with that money? Nothing. They didn't reinvest into the team, and that to me was the problem.
And in fact, the prices of tickets and whatnot actually went up last year overall. But they did compared to the year prior. Like, it was still more affordable. Last year it went up, and I'm just like, but I feel like I'm getting it's a shittier quality product. So 100%. I really don't feel like I really want to attend.
That's why we
I
didn't go
spend
that,
more
we
money.
Didn't go that many baseball games.
Yeah, because I'm like, I'm spending more money for a worse quality product. So why? You know what I mean? you're not going to reinvest in the team. And then now with the Bally Sport deal, not to bring up that whole fiasco, they're about to get even less money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the problem. That's why they're holding out. And I don't know, you know, obviously they're claiming that's why. I mean, they probably knew that this was happening from the beginning of the offseason, though. So they still lied. Sure. Because I read a great article on, you know, it's a fan thing on Viva Alberto's by this guy named JP Hill, where he's showing how basically all their moves this offseason make sense in a context of them having had like a $165 million payroll in mind going into the season, because that's basically what it looks like. You know, like all the, like people were like, why'd they rush to sign Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. That's
filler. You could get that whenever. Well, they needed cost. They needed to make sure their costs were fixed and stuff. So, you know, anyway, the point is they did lie about that shit, and it pisses me off too. But that's Bill DeWitt. That's not Mozeliak. I mean, Mozeliak carried the lie for him for sure, but he's paid to do that. You know, like, and also,
yeah, I'm but regardless,
Mozeliak would
regardless, it's on both. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, the cheapness isn't on him either. That's all Bill DeWitt. So we don't know the fucking finances of this shit. I mean, who knows? Maybe he's got a gambling problem or something. I don't fucking know. But
yeah, well, the thing is that I think that with Bill DeWitt, he was, I think, overall worth like ninth out of all the wealth and whatnot compared to all owners of all baseball teams, you know, whatnot. So he's not doing that bad off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, most baseball teams operate on a basis of like they might take some profits out, but for the most part, they just only operate the team with the money that it generates. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just a little thing they get to keep hanging on to forever as its value goes up. And like I said, certainly some owners take some money out of it if they clear extra, for sure. But they're not putting their personal wealth in it. Like, none of them are. You know, the Dodgers can spend what they can spend because they get $334 million every year for their media rights deal. And the Cardinals get like 70. That's what I'm saying.
And like, let's face, and not to get deep into that, but the fact is, like with the Ohtani, you know, contract, the way it was structured is they don't have to pay for shit. His value is going to come back tenfold, and they're going to be able to pay it out afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're going to be able to sell much, all
which,
their
by the way,
value of him is going to be ridiculous. And by that point, then they'll be able to pay him out. You know, they don't have to have any upfront cost, so to speak.
Let's discuss that for a second. MLB needs to step in and be like, bullshit, you're not going to sign this guy for $700 million and then back pay him $680 million when he's done. Bullshit. You know, like, he's going to pay $2 million a year and you're going to back pay him $680 million?
It's going to break, like, it's going to break baseball.
Like, everyone says, like, Bobby Bellina, right, for the Mets. When he gets paid $1 million every year, it's not even close. I mean, he's not going to live for 680 years. You know what I mean? This is ridiculous. And this is why we need a fucking salary cap in baseball. They paid $1 billion for two players.
Yeah.
Dude, making deals like that, like the Cardinals, most other organizations literally can't defer that much money from that many players, because when it all hits on the back end, like, they're going to be insolvent because they don't have enough liquid assets to cover it. Like, yeah.
But the Dodgers will have it.
Exactly. Not to mention the risk of if the players are even any good or not. You know, like, come on, dude. It's crazy how.
And they can go on a dynasty run at this point. It won't matter. And it's going to increase their value as a team exponentially because of it. And so they'll be able to pay it all out. And let's face it, you figure in inflation and everything else as well, it's not going to be worth as much. I mean, I'm just saying it's going to be a shitload of money, but I'm just saying, though, the Dodgers are lucking out significantly with this, for sure.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, it
seems very unfair. Yeah. Not to bitch and whine, but it seems extremely unfair how you can structure deals like that, because it's going to completely break baseball. And my personal opinion is you're going to see people turning away from baseball even more because of that kind of shit.
Yeah, and if you look,
they already have a problem with drawing in fans. How are you expected to go up against teams like this? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, like
it's like we're in franchise mode. It's ridiculous.
Well, what I was saying is just getting like the EPL.
Yeah.
The EPL, like it's like okay, there's Man City and Manchester United and shit, and then there's you know what, fucking Brighton or something. Like
Leicester City.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be the same thing with MLB teams. Nobody wants that in the U.S. So, I mean, if it keeps going this way, they're going to need to put in a salary cap.
They're going to have to.
Hard floor. And based to the revenue. Like that'll. I think that's the best for the players.
Because the luxury tax is not doing shit to help stop this.
Right now, the people that make the most money are, like, the top few earners in MLB. You know, but like the mid-range free agents guys that are veterans and stuff, they don't get paid nearly as much in comparison to the rest of the players as they used to. So, I mean, if you institute a salary floor and a hard cap that redistributes some of the money to the guys in the middle, like I think that's a healthier way to do it anyway. Like I think it would be better for the game and the fans, but the owners and the players don't fucking want it. So that's why it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you don't blame the players, right? Because they're going to go out there and try to get as much money as humanly possible.
Well, of course. But their earnings and the owners love having that bullshit luxury tax that they can spend over if they feel like it, but they could also use it as an excuse not to spend. You know, it's perfect for them.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and again, I understand completely that it goes away from quote-unquote traditional baseball by putting in a salary cap, but again, we weren't dealing with
it. It's not traditional baseball anymore, though.
It's not, you know,
it's
like
it's not the same baseball I grew up with in the 90s.
No,
it's
you have. I mean, when you take a look at the fucking lineup for the Dodgers, as you pointed out, Adam, it's like going into playing MLB The Show and going in the dynasty mode and just
that's what I would say. Dynasty mode. Yeah. I said franchise mode, 100%. But I would say dynasty mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Same difference, really. But 100%, and it's just and it hurts the product completely because you know, like it's going to be hilarious if the Dodgers do not win the World Series. Like if they don't win the World Series in 5 years, it has to be a complete disaster. But again, it wouldn't matter. It's like they're just throwing money at the problem. But you have these Titans, you have the Mets, you have the Padres, you have the Dodgers. And then you have every fucking body else. Even the Yankees really aren't even in the conversation anymore when it comes to this kind
of
stuff.
And they used to be accused of the same shit. And it wasn't even close compared to the Yankees anymore.
And I'm telling you right now. I'm going to just take a quick time out. For anybody that's given me shit at all about being a Yankees fan, at least they didn't do what the fucking Dodgers are doing. So I don't want to hear it anymore. So I'm done with it. Just saying. I'm done with it.
He has a guilty conscience, dude. He knows he's doing something wrong. Like, that's what he's so mad about.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, I said, you know you're doing something wrong. That's why you're so mad about it. You got to guilt.
Oh, get out of here.
He's giving you
Cardinals
shit.
I'm a Cardinals fan. I know. So I said, I'm a Cardinals fan, but I'm also a Yankees fan. That all started because of Derek Jeter. But I also like Chuck Knoblauch. And, you know, obviously, I loved Roger Clemens before the PED shit. I love Mariano Rivera. Like, you know.
If I was
Scott Brocious, the whole man.
If I was going to idolize a shortstop, I probably wouldn't idolize one that was terrible defensively. But, you know, that's just me. You know, I got Ozzie Smith. Okay, I'll take him over Derek Jeter any day.
Well, that's, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, that's also not okay. It's not a fair comparison, but that's cool.
Should have played second base.
All right. I'm not going to get in this conversation with you, OJ. But all right. Anyways, let's move on away from talking about the unfairness that is now turning into the MLB. Let's talk a little bit about the offseason updates here for the Cardinals. Lots of arbitration coming down. Tommy Edmonds on the list. Carlson, Helsley, John King. Andrew Kittredge and Jojo Romero are all on the arbitration list. Although I think that Jojo Romero was able to avoid arbitration, correct? Yes. Adam, you're the one that sent that over to us, right? He's that the only correct. One on that list that has avoided arbitration, correct?
Oh, wait.
No.
I think it's just Tommy Edmonds that's in arbitration.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you got Helsley, King, Kittredge, Jojo Romero. They all, I believe, were signed. Avoiding. They all signed. They all avoided arbitration. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. When I when I read what you sent over, it kind of like the language of it kind of looked weird to me. And I'm like, what? No, you know, right. So like,
you're right. The way that press release was terrible. It was hard to tell what they meant. They could have meant what you were saying. It could have been all of those guys are going to arbitration or just Tommy Edman is in arbitration. I think it's the final.
It's a period there after. Yeah. So basically the news update was the Cardinals exchange arbitration figures with Tommy Edman, period. And then Dylan Carlson, Helsley, King, Kittredge, Romero have all agreed to 1-year deals avoiding arbitration.
Okay. Cool. Okay. So that actually is a lot off the list. But
yes. Yeah, I didn't. See so that was a big relief. Yeah, no, that was a big relief that we avoided salary arbitration with all those players, which is definitely a smart move, for sure. Yeah.
Because Tommy will be disillusioned with the process.
Yeah,
probably.
You know.
Now we've already kind of talked about it. We've already kind of talked about it a little bit, but Mo's already stated now that he does not see the payroll increasing at this point. So I'm just going to ask the question. I think we are all pretty much on the same page, Adam. We'll start with you here. You know, are the Cardinals set up to make a run now? Are they good? Like, what's your thought process on the Cardinals?
Yeah, we're not near where we need to be. I mean, from a pitching perspective, certainly we made some movement for sure, and we've already addressed this. We talked about Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, etc. Kittredge now, of course, with the avoiding arbitration. You know, and we've traded for some younger arms. You know, we have Fernandez, O'Brien, Robertson, all those guys. And while they can certainly help us with a little bit of depth and potential in the bullpen, I don't think that we're going to make a serious run by any means. You know, they really didn't invest the money and especially make those off-season trades and pickups and whatnot that I was hoping that they were. You know, we were in potential contention for, you know, all these big names and whatnot, and then it all just fell flat. All the rumors were just that, they were all rumors, and of course the Dodgers winded up picking up like everybody, and it was just another very disappointing offseason. And in fact, in my opinion, feels even more disappointing than last season offseason, and the reason being is because we were promised that spending was going to go up and that we were going to make some serious moves, and we were all hoping for that. However, I don't feel that promise was kept.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think as well. You know, this. Listen, I think we'll be better than what we were last year of finishing dead last in the Central, and being really flirting with dead last in the all of MLB. I think we'll make a step up from that. But this could be another year without the playoffs, guys. I hate to say it like that, but
well, yeah, the truth, really. I really don't anticipate us going in and actually getting to the playoffs. Can somebody seriously point to where we made significant improvements that we're actually going to be competitive against other teams that have made even bigger moves in our own division? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The Cubs are going to be a serious contender. They're no longer the lovable losers anymore. They actually have made significant changes in their organization.
Right.
You know, and the Brewers and everybody else. I mean, it's just we have to remain competitive, and we're not staying on pace or surpassing any of them. We're, in fact, we're slumping compared to their moves.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. OJ, you're always the guy that looks at the glass half full for us. What's your thoughts here, and what's your expectations for the Cardinals going into the season?
Yeah, so I think Zips has them winning like somewhere in the high 80s. So that's nice.
86.
Had them winning more last year before they completely shit the bed. So, you know, that shows how much that can mean. But, you know, at least it means there's at least some, you know, tangible reason to have hope for a good year. And, you know, as much as I hate the – I shouldn't say hate. As much as we're underwhelmed by the starting pitching, like, there's a lot to like about the lineup. And – you know, I expect to see steps forward from Jordan Walker and Mason Wynn, especially Jordan Walker, because he started getting much more comfortable in right field towards the end of last year. And he actually had an interview where he was saying like, oh, I actually want the ball hit to me now, something like that.
Right.
It's like at the beginning of the year, he was like scared to have the ball hit to him or some shit. Like, of course he was doing terrible. That was malpractice on their part, having him break camp with the big league club. But he's past that bumpy road. And now he's, you know, we just wait for his hitting to continue to develop, even though it's already much better than major league average. So if his defense is like somewhat improved, like even if he's just like below average defensively, he's going to be a really valuable player for us. So, you know, I think Mason Wynn could take some big strides offensively. That was kind of the pattern for him through the minors, is hit a new level, struggle for a couple months, and then break through and go on a tear. Right. So you could look to, there's reason to believe he could increase his hitting performance. So yeah, if things break right with the position players, you're going to get a lot of runs. And you're going to have okay defense as long as you're not putting out Burleson in left field, which I don't think they plan on doing that. They didn't mention him as being in the outfield mix next year. Mosaic didn't anyway. So let's pray to God they don't do that anymore.
Right. You're not lying there.
I mean, it wasn't just him. It was a combination of him and Walker out there. Really, like I said, I think they shot themselves in the foot by not paying enough attention to defense and base running, basically all the fundamentals of baseball. I felt like they didn't pay enough attention to last season. I think that really hurt them, especially having the extremely poor outfield defense that they had. Like, when anything that gets out of the infield is falling, that's a problem for a pitcher. You know what I mean? Especially when you have contact rotation. So honestly, I think there was some bad luck. I think there were some misdeployed players. And I think if management learned from their mistakes and goes back to doing some things the way they were doing them before, you're going to have a better outcome. So, you know, I think they could win high 80s games too. And that would mean probably playoffs, because you probably win the Central with that. So there is reason. You know, you think someone's going to win 90 plus games other than the Cardinals in the Central?
So, here's the thing. So I'm actually looking at it right now, because I was going to state it. So if Zips is right, say 86 wins, that is quite a bit of improvement. It's 15 games from last year. But however, 86 would put us into a wild card spot. Arizona Diamondbacks had 84. The Miami Marlins also had 84. In the standings last year, I'm pretty certain Milwaukee had 92 wins. So
no, I'm asking you who has more by Zips, or is that number not out there for next year?
I didn't look at this. I'm just referring to last year's comparison to what.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. To the forecast, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
like, what 86 will do. Yeah.
Forecast to forecast, because I don't think.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying.
I think they're regressing. Like all the teams in the Central are like getting worse, or like the Cubs haven't done much, even though they did get Imanaga, which is good for them, but they lost some guys too. So, like, honestly, the Central looks like it's going to be shit again.
It is, and I think that I certainly will say that the path to the Central Division Championship will not be an easy one for any team, including the Cubs. But if we continue seeing some of the more misfortune that we've seen last year, we're not going to stand anywhere close to being a competitor. I mean, I see what Zips is saying, but at the same time, if we're still being poorly managed, like we were, we're not going to be a contender.
Yeah. So it really is on them learning from some mistakes they made last season.
Yeah.
If they don't, that they stand the risk of being really bad. Also, Sonny Gray could get hurt, and then you don't have an ace in your bullpen.
That's very true. That is very true. He's expected to have a 3.6 WAR as well, with 154 innings pitched. However, you don't have that. That completely throws a big ass wrench into, you know, to our starting lineup. That's a significant one that we're putting a lot of, you know, we're weighing a lot on. And because the rest of our lineup, or I'm sorry, the rest of our starting pitching is very, you know, well, we already went through that before. We don't have to even, yeah, I don't have to beat a dead horse there. We all know how we feel about the rest of that. But I just want to say real quick too, if we do not have another successful year, my prediction is I think that Marmol will be gone after this season. And And I believe too, if it continues, I think, because I was just looking, I think Mozeliak's contract is up in 25. I don't see them bringing him back either if it continues that direction. That's just my prediction.
Yeah. Mozeliak, I think, probably wants to retire. I think he wanted to retire earlier than this, but he stayed on because of like COVID or something. And he signed an extra extension. Yeah. But
I think that it'll probably be at the end of, it looks like his contract will end after the 25 season. So he'll have two more this season and the following season. But I don't think that he'll be back after that. I don't anticipate it. Yeah. But the real big thing is with Ollie, I really don't think that we're going to see Ollie after this season if we have another shit season.
Yeah. If we have another non-competitive year, it's going to be Yadier Molina, and they're going to have to make that decision quick. Because like if you they have will. Like if you say like okay, if they say they make the wild card, right? So okay, let's just base it off of last year. They make 86 or get 86 wins, they get in the last wild card spot and say get swept out of the playoffs. Is that a success? Does Mozeliak DeWitt, do they look at that as a success or not? Just to get in the playoffs barely and then to get, you know, swept out. If the answer is yes, then you can try to keep Marmol, but Yadier Molina will be gone. He will not be. I mean, he will go coach somewhere else. I mean, he's going to be the manager somewhere else.
Staff. He's just. Well, no, it's not that. It's. I don't think he's going to be a manager anytime soon because he's only taken on like an advisor role. I think because he was wanting to spend time with his family. Like I think he's at a stage.
He has a lot going on. Yeah, he has a lot going on for sure.
Just stay close to home. I don't know that he's ready to go manage anywhere
yet. I don't think he's ready yet. And he's itching to be obviously become a manager, and this gives him the ability to do it, especially whenever he's, you know, more abroad and spending more time in Puerto Rico and things. But I really do think that they'll extend an offer to Molina eventually.
I would like to see that, honestly.
Yeah, same here.
But this gives them that ability to kind of like give him a, you know, sort of an easy slide into it, you know what I mean? Like it gives him the time to enjoy a little retirement and this and that, and also but he's still connected in some fashion, and also maybe he can sort of take over some of the reins in the meantime.
Yeah, and you know, I also wanted to say on the positive side is that I do actually like what they've done with the bullpen, like beyond Kittredge. Like, so, well, actually, you know, if between Kittredge, Gallegos and Helsley, you got a pretty solid back of the could probably take a step forward. I think he might have struggled with that pitch clock last season, but anyway, I'm just saying, I do like the way their bullpen looks, so that can help make up for some of the lackluster starting pitching as well. Although they should give you innings, but like if Lynn's getting beat up, you can go to your bullpen because you got guys that you can trust now. So it's not ideal, obviously, but I do think their bullpen, because their bullpen blew a lot of saves last year. That's right. I was going to mention that. They blew like a lot of saves. And if they'd just been like average, they win like 80 games or something like that. Like, yeah, so, you know, your bullpen can make a big difference. Yeah, just end that on.
Yeah, again, it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening for the next upcoming season, especially with the payroll being where it's at. But we'll obviously live and learn, and we'll go from there. Let's take a look here about some Battle Hawks news and stuff like that. A lot of big news when it comes around to the XFL. So it's no longer the XFL. It's the UFL, the United Football League. So if you haven't heard, the USFL, which was the United States Football League, and the XFL, have merged into one league, and it's named the UFL. Each league will bring in four teams, and there will be two divisions, just like in both these leagues. But there will be an XFL division where you have the four teams from the XFL, and then you will have a USFL division where the four teams of the USFL will be there. The XFL teams that made it are St. Louis Battlehawks. Caw will be back. We figured that they would be at this point, since we obviously dominated the attendance and merchandise records there. In fact, you can still get your season tickets for the Battle Hawks in the 400s. Yes, they are selling upper deck tickets.
Yeah.
For season, and they are in. From what I've been hearing, they're we might end up getting to be attendances closer to 40 to 45,000. In fact, they said that for the season opener. Again, we don't know when that's going to be, but for the season opener, it could be somewhere around 50,000 fans, which would be incredible to see that back in St. Louis, but we'll see.
Well,
the DC Defenders are also go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know that we were, Danny Garcia, she came out and said in College Game Day that we were the most successful market in spring football. And I think that we've definitely showed it. And that's awesome that we continue to show up as fans. And I hope that we continue to do so and fill the top, you know, throughout this upcoming season. So I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, The Rock even said, too, flat out, like, that we were averaging 35,000 fans per game.
He better be there. I'm just telling you, first game, The Rock better be there. I'm challenging him. So, if you, Rock, if you're listening to our podcast, which I'm sure you are, because if you know what's good for you, then we challenge you. Show up in St. Louis.
Didn't show up last year.
Didn't he have, like, the Oscars or something? Little gig. Yeah, what's more important, Battle Dome, Oscars. Show up to the Battle Dome.
Also, let's hope to God that our first home game is not week four, because that's
Shit, dude. Yeah, I expect after last year how we kind of got the shaft there, we should be able to host week one, in my opinion.
Yeah, that shit was slapped together last year.
That was so crappy for us. I mean, reward your fans. Come on now.
But yeah, I look forward to this for sure. It's nice to run straight from Mizzou football into Battlehawks football and don't even have to consider the league who should not be named.
All righty. So anyways, back to here to the four teams that did make the cut. So the Battlehawks, obviously, are back. The DC Defenders are back. They were 9-1 last year with Jordan Tomeu. Tomeu at the helm. So you figured that they were probably going to be back. San Antonio Brahmas are back, even after dismal years. And the XFL champions, Arlington Renegades, are back. From the USFL, they're bringing in the Birmingham Stallions, the Memphis Showboats, and the Michigan Panthers. And the Houston Roughnecks, which is good. One gets an asterisk because the Houston Roughnecks are actually from an XFL team, but they're keeping the entire coaching staff from the Houston team because they. So the USFL and the XFL both had teams in Houston. So essentially, what they did was they merged the two. So the players from the Houston Roughnecks are going to Houston's Houston. The name will stay, but the coaching staff. And the building from the I can't remember what the name was for the Houston USFL team, but they will be in place. So they're kind of merging the two together. So real quick, before we talk about the Battle Hawks here and look a little bit about the roster, especially after this dispersal draft, you know, Adam, I'm going to start with you here. Do you think this is good for the leagues, or do you think that it would have been better to have them two separate entities?
Well, I mean. It seems like the merger, it could be positive for both of them per se, you know, especially it's really, in my opinion, throwing a lifeline to the USFL because the XFL overall was doing much better off than the USFL. Obviously, they had a better model, in my opinion. The fact that we were actually playing, you know, in home cities, that was significant for sure. And it looks like they're going to have some equal partnership as well, from my understanding in the structure, you know, that they're going to have like the XFL division and the USFL division per se. So it's going to be interesting. You know, for me, the real test lies in the execution, you know, and if they actually seem to integrate it seamlessly and maintain those, you know, team identities, especially for St. Louis. And they'd really just start and they really have to deliver an engaging product for sure. I think there's some improvements they can make and also make some improvements in the playoffs and how that really looks. It could be beneficial for both of the leagues, you know, and it could also potentially attract a broader fan base. The only thing that I have to say that I'm still a bit disappointed about is that you have three teams still in Texas. You have all these teams, and three of them are all grouped together in Texas still. And I'm like, cringe a little bit, because, you know, they collapse all these other teams, and I'm like, why do we still have three in Texas? But it is what it is.
Well, I'm waiting on them to start practicing in their own skin. Like, I want them to practice in their own skin too. That helps a lot for
it. It does. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. OJ, what's your thoughts here? I mean, do you think that this is good for leagues as well? Would they have been better to keep them separate?
Oh, I think it's good for the league because for both of them, because I think we've seen it with like a lot of lesser sports in this continent. Like if you look at women's hockey, that's a great example of how like all these different leagues competing with each other wind up hurting the whole. It's better to combine them if possible. Like honestly, that operation from the XFL last year, I think was pretty fly by night. Not gonna lie, I kind of was sure if that league would really have staying power. It made it harder for me to get as into it as I was the first time around. So now that the leagues have combined, I feel like there's a little more financial stability, and now it's time for the leagues to start growing. And now I'm more excited about it actually now. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm kind of like back and forth on this. And the reason why, I mean, it's obviously really good for both leagues to combine. So now you have some sort of financial stability. You only have to worry about one TV deal, which it sounds like they're going to go through ESPN again, because obviously The Rock and Danny Garcia obviously have some influence there. So that's what it sounds like. I mean, I feel really bad, though, that you're cutting eight teams. You know, and you're also cutting players from those teams. Obviously, a few of them found homes, but you're really hurting the fan bases, too. I thought that if you were going to do something like this, you probably need to try to bring in and just say, OK, we're going to try a 16 team league. That's a lot. It's expensive. I know. But try it. And then if it doesn't work where you need to, like, be able to go down a little bit, then cool. Now you start cutting teams, just like what they decided to do with the XFL the first time around. Obviously, with COVID, though, you know, happened stuff like that. But they already knew that there was going to be some teams that were going to, you know, lose and then get replaced, essentially. So,
I think that there could have been a couple teams they could have lost, like Vegas, for example. They had no support. Mm-hmm. They really had none at all. I was a bit surprised by Seattle. But Vegas, I could have seen them drop for sure. I was expecting, like, at least one of the times, especially like San Antonio, like why do they need San Antonio? They were not a great team anyway. And
yeah, I was very
like, you already had three teams in freaking Texas. Like why keep them? You know, like if obviously they had their own strategy, if it was me, I would have dropped San Antonio, maybe kept Seattle or something. That would have been my opinion for the league.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah, the problem with it, from my understanding, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, has a real strong affiliation with San Antonio. So, I mean, he went there, and I think he even, like, came up with the name. I could be wrong, but...
Well, they're headquartered in Arlington, so I don't know why they have such a strong affiliation with San Antonio, but...
I'm just
telling you... It's not that far, you know what I mean?
No, 100%, but I'm talking about him personally. I just remember like during, and I could be wrong, but I just remember last year, like when obviously the buildup and stuff like that, like he was constantly around that team. He was constantly talking to Hines Ward, excuse me. Which by the way, is no longer going to be the coach for San Antonio. He has been fired. But anyways, it's like he was constantly talking to that team. So I have no idea. That's just what I kind of remember hearing. And I thought that was kind of odd. I'm like, all right. And I had a feeling that I'm looking at that going, all right, well, here we go. Like, are you tipping your hand that like you're going to put more eggs in the basket of San Antonio than anybody else? But obviously that ended up not being the case. But it just kind of felt that way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, Anyways, it's just going to be, you know, really interesting to see what ends up happening. But since these teams have been slashed out and reduced from 16 teams down to just eight, there was what they call the dispersal draft. So essentially, this was actually kind of a cool idea. So to keep teams within the like talent, essentially in the XFL, the teams that got cut, like, as you said, stated like Seattle, the Seattle Sea Dragons, you know, the Vegas Vipers and stuff like that. They will stay. There was a draft specifically for needs with the XFL team. So USFL players stayed in the USFL, XFL stayed in the XFL. Now, after the draft was ended, all those players, it would be just a free agent pool. So then, like, an XFL can grab a USFL, USFL can grab an XFL player, so on and so forth. But that would be for the big draft, the big board draft that happens here. So some quick results here from the dispersal draft that did happen. We did pick up the top receiver last year, which actually he was pretty impressive too. Jakor Pearson from Seattle. He was phenomenal. We also picked up the number two from Seattle as well, and Blake Jackson. We have a very, very good receiving core. Is Butler back? That was the other thing too. Yes, Hakeem Butler's back. He led the league in touchdowns, but we did lose two of our playmakers at the wide receiver spot. So this totally makes sense. We also picked up center Donovan West from the Vipers, Antoine Jackson, a defensive lineman from the Dragons. And then we had Kennedy, he's a cornerback from the Vipers, and then another cornerback and Chris Payton Jones from the Dragons. So we only picked up, you know, from either the Sea Dragons or we picked up from the Vipers, but you know, hey, whatever have you at that
point. Yeah. Right. And we also picked up one name that you didn't mention there, but Pita Tamupenu, who was the defensive player of the year last year as well. So he's a linebacker from the Vipers we picked up. Cool. So that's awesome.
List, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah. We picked him up a few days ago. He was the defensive player of the year. He's headed to the Lou.
It wasn't part of the draft. So then it was probably part of the free agent signing.
Probably. Okay. So, and then just to call out here too, our cornerback, Tim Harris, and also our linebacker, Carson Wells, which I was just looking up Carson Wells. This dude is huge. They literally they both have the top in game speed last season. So our cornerback, 22.12 miles per hour. Carson Wells, this linebacker, unreal. I've never seen this, like a linebacker this big of a dude, 21.88 miles an hour. I'm like, the dude is just super fast for a linebacker, unreal. But anyway, so we've got some speed too. So we have some defense, we got some speed. I'm looking forward to it.
Taking a look at the roster, obviously we're taking a huge hit at the quarterback position. Aaron will not be back. We kind of knew that with him being signed with the Bengals. It will be Nick Tiano's team. Nick Tiano, if you remember when AJ McCarron was injured, he did an okay job.
He stepped in for a little bit. Yeah.
Vincent, he lost the game.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Do they have Vinny Testaverde on them? Are you seeing that on their roster?
No, he's not listed on the roster. Right now, they only have two quarterbacks listed, which is Nick Tiano and Manny Wilkins.
I was looking at it on Wikipedia for some reason, but I guess.
Yeah. Before we get to the rest of the roster, timeout on this, because Adam, I know I sent this to you, but shame on Matthew Posens, who works for Sports Illustrated, by the way.
That was garbage.
Fucking article I've ever read about the XFL.
That was so garbage.
Who talked about the 2020 version of the XFL and stuff like that, as well as last year. He got things wrong. He's just like, by the way, hold on. They corrected it. They have corrected it. I literally have a note. There's a note at the very bottom of it. They corrected it. But originally he said that we went 7-5. And DC went 9-1. How do we play 12 games and they play 10? But okay, whatever. What's up?
How did he not get basic information right?
Not even that. He got in the 2020, he said that we were led by Heineken, who was not our quarterback. We didn't even get to sign him.
Yeah, it was Tom.
Immediately took off. Obviously, it was a throw in Samoan. Like, it was like, really? Like, you didn't even do basic research and you work for Sports Illustrated? Shame on you, dude. But that's the problem is, like, they're so. Go ahead.
I was just saying they're trash. That's all. Sports Illustrated is trash.
Yeah, but so there's just a lot of confusion when it comes around this. I wish that I had the resources to be able to just, like, okay, I'm going to make like an ESPN page for the XFL, keeping stats and stuff like that, but obviously I don't have the time or resources for that. But Anyway, so taking a look at it here, we did lose one of our running backs. We do have Mateo Durant, which is more of the bruising back. We also on the list here have Max Borgie, and we also have Kevon Latales, or Latales. But I'm not too sure, again, if they're going to be able to help out or not. We unfortunately did lose our St. Louis hero in Austin Parole. He's gone. I was hoping so much that he would stay, but he is no longer here. We do still have Jake Sutherland, and we have Kimora Gamble as well. Also Kamari Everett, both are pretty good, but Sutherland's a pretty decent dude. Yeah, so and when you take a look, we do have Ben DeLuca for our defensive back. And is honestly, Adam, when I look at this, we had Nico Bolden. And to your point, like you said it before, we got some, like, we are stacked at the defensive back. Like,
we are extremely
stacked. Very good secondary.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
On the defensive tackle side, Kevin Akins is back too, and he was a stud last year. Very excited to see that. The one thing that's pretty funny, and in the XFL, it doesn't really matter too much, but we don't have a kicker. So I'm wondering if we,
you know what, punter, you're right.
Sterling Hoffridge is our punter. I'm wondering if, and this was kind of a conversation that some teams were might transition to do this, where you have a punter and a kicker. Cause obviously they can train to do, you know, two jobs at once essentially. And it saves you a roster spot. And there's not a lot of kicking in the XFL anyways. Obviously there is no extra point. You're only kicking a field goal every once in a blue moon, but let's be honest, it's based on offense, so they're not really going to kick. Why are you going to pay a kicker in a roster spot for him to kick once, maybe every other game? You know what I mean? So it doesn't make sense. But yeah, this is going to be very interesting to see. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited. You know, it sucks. If we had McCarron, I would be like, dude, this team is stacked. But we'll
see. I was hoping that maybe Jordan Tamu was, you know, an option as well, because obviously he was released at the end of last year with DC Defenders, you know, at the end of his contract. So or not the end of his contract. I guess he was released from his contract. But anyway, I think he went to the Vikings like for a little bit as far as like practice squad shit. And they immediately like let him go. But I was like, I was hoping that, you know, maybe he was an option too.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I think he's going back to
he's going DC to Canada. Defenders. Apparently he was picked up by the Saskatchewan Rough Riders of the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, he's one of the Rough Riders, right?
Yeah.
No kidding.
So anyway, apparently they have hold exclusive rights to Tamu. Should he seek to play in the CFL unless they remove him from the list. But anyway, yeah. So I guess he's going to be playing for them. I was just like, damn, that'd be cool if we could bring him back.
Well, I mean, it feels like it's just been it feels like it's like just a giant carousel when it comes to quarterbacks coming in and out of this league. So
you're going
to, who knows, maybe Tiato is going to be the MVP. Who knows? Right.
Who knows?
Going to be interesting. You know, it's interesting. I think that the roster stacks up pretty well to last year, obviously, without McCarron. We'll have to see what the quarterback position is. But, you know, OJ, what's your thoughts on the roster that you see here or kind of heard about? Obviously, you know, there's a lot of names that we haven't talked about and stuff like that. But just kind of pointing up a lot more of the skill position players. What's your thoughts, OJ?
Well, I like it. I just worry that the quarterback position is going to hold us back. It's really going to, I don't know. It's really going to depend on how good a play we can get from that. So I'm a little nervous about it, but we'll see.
Yeah, and then by the way, too, this doesn't mean that we won't draft one either. Yeah, 100%. We could be drafting a college player. Could also be drafting one from the USFL or even XFL in the upcoming draft. The dispersal draft is something completely separate. So. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of talks that some of these players that know they won't get drafted, or their you know, their draft stock is not very high in the NFL.
Draft Brady Cook.
Yeah. Well, Cook is will be coming back.
I know. Yeah. I'm just like, hey, if some college player draft Brady Cook, obviously not going to happen, but sure. Then we'd be like, hell yeah, we're going all the way, baby.
Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see for sure. But speaking of Cook, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Mizzou football and the NCAA landscape. So if you've been living under a rock in St. Louis or really in Missouri, Mizzou did beat Ohio State in their bowl game 14-3. This was more of a defensive struggle than I think we thought it was going to be. Yes, I understand that Marvin Harrison Jr. was not playing in the game. Yes, they didn't have their starting quarterback, blah, 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 but it's still fucking Ohio State. And yeah, our defense was phenomenal in this
game. It was. Stopped about a field goal.
Yeah.
They couldn't move the ball against us. Quarterback or no, you're Ohio State. You're supposed to have these big, bad offensive linemen, but right, we just dominated. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. It was such a defensive game. I kept saying that the whole game. I'm like, man, what a defensive matchup we have here, you know, between these two teams for sure. It was unreal.
Yeah. Don't let anybody tell you Mizzou beat Ohio State second stringers or some shit. There were reports and stuff before the game about how few opt-outs there were. Yeah, they ran their quarterback out of town, so they don't get any credit for that one in the first place. Their first stringer all season, they said they ran him out. So then they were the ones that decided we'll go with the backup, and then he got hurt, and then they had to rely on their unprepared third-string freshman. So that's their fault. And then they had Marvin Harrison Jr. opt out. They had some injuries. Mizzou had some injuries too, especially on the defensive side of the ball. We were missing Tyron Hopper and Ennis Rakestraw. So we were missing a starting linebacker and cornerback, probably the better cornerback that we had. As good as Chris Abrams Drain is, Ennis Rakestraw, they don't even throw at him. Like, so that's what I'm saying. Like, it was a good win. It was a pretty, you know, you can't really say Missouri didn't beat Ohio State. They beat
Ohio State.
And Ohio State couldn't move on them.
And here's the interesting thing too, OJ. So a lot of people were sitting there saying, well, if they had Marvin Harrison, like they would have been able to make these deeper throws and these. I'm sitting there going, yo, it's not like he's a professional athlete playing like in a high school football here. You know what I mean? Like, he's still playing against SEC guys that have been able to keep top receivers at Georgia in check. You know what I mean? Like, well, come on. Give us some credit here.
Had time for a deep pass. That's why Mizzou couldn't throw it deep. They couldn't get time because Ohio State's defensive line was fucking our offensive line up.
Well, thankfully, Cody Schrader was able to, you know, basically bolt through those two defenders at the end, you know, in the fourth quarter. You know, so to be able to open it up at that point, but it was not a deep throw, that's for sure. He just had to bowl through those guys.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That dude's more of a stud than
Right. Oh, yeah. Cody Schrader is the absolute shit. And I say he's going to go very far in the NFL.
I hope so, man. I really hope so. It's just,
I hope so too.
You know, he's got a damn good work ethic. B, he's small, but that's what I'm hoping he gets in. Like, he's like this David Eckstein type player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That gets in.
He's always been a hard-ass worker.
Starts shredding it up. Yeah.
Yeah. He's always been a hard-ass worker from the very beginning. Even at Truman, like, but he's before.
I would like to use my platform to spread the word and advocate for Cody Schrader for the cover of the next NCAA game. I mean, what is sport about if not Cody Schrader, his story? Yep. You know what I mean? Like, that's the guy. That's the college football player. You know, that's the whole story you want to be selling to people, right? So put him on the cover. It would be a lot better than, you know, whatever else at ESPN probably. Yeah. 6 year senior. Yeah.
That's what a dude, and that we'll say that for a different time, because obviously, you know, we're getting into it here. But you know, this whole thing where there's players OJ that just got approved for a seventh year. I'm like, what point? Like, so by the way, here's the thing. I actually like Bo Nix. He had a good year for Oregon, stuff like that. I think he's a very good player. But Bo Nix is married, has a house, and has a kid, if I remember correctly. And he's playing college football. I'm sorry.
He's probably a millionaire. He's probably got a dietitian and fucking personal trainer and all that shit.
Right. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous. Like, this portal in the NIL, and we'll definitely talk about this at a different time. I think it's destroying college football. But let's stay here on more on Mizzou stuff before we get in the weeds. you know, after this win here in Ohio State, which I think was a very good win for the program, is as much as people don't want to give us credit for, what does the outlook look like for Mizzou when it comes to recruiting, getting recognition and stuff like that? Let's not forget here that we finished eighth in the final in the final AP ranking.
AP role, yeah.
You know, OJ, yeah, exactly. OJ, what's your thoughts here, you know, on, you know, our potential for recruiting? Is this beginning of a good era for Mizzou football?
Absolutely. I mean, it sucks we just lost our defensive coordinator. Before that, I was like all in. Now it's, oh boy, let's see. Hopefully that he doesn't drag. Yeah,
and he's taking the same job at LSU. Really? Why would you make a lateral move to LSU? Come on.
They're making the highest paid coordinator in all of college football, and they're paying $1 million to break his contract to Missouri. So, you know, it's not the worst, you know, it's just one of those things, like, mm-hmm. you just can't stop it from happening. Like, they're just they have too much power, you know, but as long as Drinkwitz doesn't get poached, I think we're in a good shape to get a good new defensive coordinator as well. And the reason I think that is because Drinkwitz's track record of hiring coordinators is pristine. Like, his first defensive coordinator he hired, I think, was Steve Wilks, who is apparently doing pretty good in the NFL. From what I've heard, and not that I pay attention to that, but I've heard people say he does pretty good there. Even though, and he kind of took over a depleted unit and kind of struggled at first, but then got him going towards the end of it. You know, and then you got Barry Odom, you got Kirby, or not Barry Odom, sorry, Blake Baker, Kirby Moore. Like, he seems to be able to identify good, smart football people to bring in and help him run his team. So I honestly am like, I think Mizzou's on their way to try and to build themselves into something of a powerhouse. Like, mm-hmm. I think they're trying to go Kentucky and be like, we're not a blue blood, but we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I definitely feel the same way, especially with the, you know, the changing landscape that we'll talk about in a second. But Adam, what you're going to say something before I cut you off?
Sorry. I was going to say, I think with the success of this season, which by far I think has been, you know, one of the most fun seasons, and if you've been a Mizzou fan for a very, very long time, for sure, this definitely draws a lot of attention to Mizzou, and we can actually start seeing that, because I'm looking at an article here at the end of December, there are already 20 players that signed their letter of intent to commit to Mizzou, and that gave the Tigers their third top 25 recruiting class in the past four seasons. So they continue to see under Drink, you know, he's managing at a very effective level. And now we're in the top 10 ranked, teams as well. You know, that definitely is going to give us an upper hand and an advantage when it comes to recruitment as well. So I think that going forward, like you said, as long as Drink doesn't get poached, I think that we'll continue to see success in the future.
And I definitely think that there's also some shift now in public opinion, too, because CBS came out with their rankings, or not the rankings, but their grade letter for each of the teams. Give me 2 seconds. I can pull that up because I actually kept it on my phone for this. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So there were 7 teams that got an A+, and Missouri was one of them.
Yeah.
Right there with Michigan. And I 100% full-heartedly agree. I mean, like, it was, as you said, Adam, this is the most fun I've had watching Mizzou football since their national title contention team, when they were number one in the nation and they couldn't beat Oklahoma. Like, you lost 2 games to fucking Oklahoma. Like, but okay. Mm-hmm. Anyways, especially with Oklahoma, like, at that time, but whatever. But
yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting. And getting to the point that I was going to get to before I interrupted you, Adam, the landscape of college football, I think, is changing completely here because Nick Saban is retiring. That means a lot for the SEC now, because there's already four recruits that have just bailed on Alabama, and their top recruit, the number 9 in the country, has left his commitment to Alabama because of Nick Saban's retirement.
Yeah.
Missouri for a 5-star wide receiver, because they had one that flipped to Texas on them.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. Like,
that is big.
Or, you know, like, buy one, get one free. Right? Like, fire sale time.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you've got a coach who has, you know, 7 national championships, you know, and he up and retires, and it was a huge shock,
six,
you know.
Six.
It was it six? I thought it was 7. Or, okay, my bad.
No. I think he had 6 at Alabama and then 1, I think, for LSU. So you might be
so
right.
So that'd be 7.
I'll have to look
yeah.
that up. But I thought it was 7. No, 100%. So that's what I'm saying. I'd have to look that
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I have 7 national championships, 12 conference titles, 19 bowl wins between Michigan
right,
State and Alabama. So, you know, and he's also obviously influenced a lot of other coaches and players, you know, with his culture, you know, and influenced their culture, their philosophy, everything else. So it was definitely a big deal. And in fact, from what I read is he actually made the decision like only 5 minutes before he told the team that he was going to retire. So yeah, it's going to have a significant impact on the landscape of college football. It's not going to just be for Bama because it's obviously people are going to be, you know, looking elsewhere now potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you look at the schedule, Alabama was like our one like sure loss next year, right? Like mm-hmm. that was the only superpower team we had to play. And now Saban's gone, they're losing players. Like,
yep.
I'm not saying that they will, because I think they still might be missing a guy or two on the defensive line to really complete the team. And we don't know how things are going to look with not having a defensive coordinator. But we do also have Theo Weiss coming back on the offensive side of the ball. So our receiving core is going to be the same. Quarterback's coming back. We got some pretty good transfers in on the offensive line. Like, I think it's looking like it could be – they could wind up having a pretty good record going into the college football playoffs. And then once you're in, yeah. anything can happen. So let's go. Natty. Yep. Natty next year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out, right? You know, especially I think that getting to – like to your point, Adam, that if people are going to look beyond the SEC now, obviously – now that Saban's gone out of Alabama, I think that Alabama's going to end up going to being an okay team. I mean, and it's going to be like a steady decline. I think Georgia is now that new Alabama because they already kind of had the program. And now that, like, you know, Kirby Smart at Georgia is just licking his chops going, cool, it is now my time, my era. I've already won 2. I should have been in this past CFP. Now I'm going to just take this recruiting class to the next level and go mm-hmm. from there. But I believe it helps all of the SEC in general, because there's a lot of teams that just don't know where they go. And so they yep. might look at a Mizzou or a team on the rise. I'm going to go make a statement there, you know, yep. stuff like that. I think it's, you know, it could happen. We'll have to see. We'll keep it for another topic or to another date, but I definitely want to talk about the 12-team postseason, what that kind of looks like. But anyways, we'll keep that to next time. It's going to be a good year coming up for Mizzou, hopefully. But let's talk a little bit before we sign off here about the CFP. Michigan, unfortunately, wins the national title. The fucking cheaters, you know, beat Washington. And it wasn't really even that close. It was 34-13. Washington could not get anything really going on that one. Yep. But good for Washington to beating Texas. A lot of people thought Texas was going to slaughter Washington. Michigan shows that Alabama just was not the team that everyone said they were, even though they beat Georgia. But I just, you know, it sucks that, you know, Michigan won. Let me ask you guys a question. Adam, I'm going to start with you here.
Sure.
Do you believe that, you know, after the NCAA, because the NCAA is still investigating Michigan, do you think they're going to strip the title or vacate the title from Michigan?
No, I don't think that they will. I think, though, that this title will still be tainted, though, by the sign stealing incident for sure. But I don't see them actually stripping them of the title itself. I've just seen them go too light on Michigan for sure. I mean, with Harbaugh and the so-called, you know, punishment of, oh, well, you can't be on the sidelines and coach. Yeah, but you can be with the team all other, you can be with them the entire time and you can still technically coach. You just can't be on the sidelines. And it was so just on game day. And it was so weak, you know, like I just don't see them going hard on Michigan. But at the same time, though, like I said, I still see them, though, as being tainted, just like we've seen with other teams in the past and their sign stealing controversies as well, aka the Astros. While they weren't stripped of it, they certainly had a reputation about them, and it's going to live with them into the future for sure. The asterisks, yes.
Yeah.
And it will live, and they'll be tainted. Bill Belichick as well, which that was another big retirement, or well, whatever you want to call it today, not to get into that. But anyway, yes, another big tainted thing as well. They're not, but of course they didn't. They were never hard on these guys. They were never hard on these guys when it came to their punishment. But there was always still the fact that they were tainted championships. So I still think that that will follow through with Michigan as well.
Well,
yeah. What do you think, OJ?
I think they're going to hit them with the Kansas special. You know, they're going to wait 6 years to a decade to make a decision on it, and then they'll vacate all the wins during the period that Stallions was there. And no one will care anymore because it was like 10 years ago. And they're like, oh, okay, right, whatever. They still won that championship. You know, people will be like, oh, they still won it, really. It's vacated, but they still won it. You know what I mean? Because they basically did at that point. I mean, they got all the recruiting benefits and all the stuff that comes along with it.
They made
it,
all the money and everything else, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no so doubt.
What does it matter?
And that's, no, and that's what I know.
Later, as they say, or whatever, you know.
Yeah. And people and will be on.
I know.
It'll be like, oh, it'd be a real shame to punish the kids there now. They had nothing to do with it. Like, yep. Oh, God.
I'm telling you, and that is almost word for word what I said earlier on the podcast, you know, in a prior session when we talked about this, when the sign stealing scandal came out. I said they need to be punished. They need to punish them now, because what they're going to happen is they're going to get all the money. They're going to get all these recruiting and stuff like that. And then they'll come out and be like, oh yeah, by the way, yeah, your title is vacated. Well, who gives a shit?
But they it doesn't matter anymore.
Benefits for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, how does that impact everybody else? And the fact is, it's going to impact a lot of players' potential careers in the future as well because of it. So at that point, yeah, it's a little too late or whatever. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? A little late.
100%. Like, I just think it's just ridiculous. I mean, because like, oh, well, you don't want to punish the kids. Don't punish the kids. Don't punish the kids. Okay,
but you're punishing the other kids in the process, though, that are impacted by this. You're punishing them and their recruiting potential.
So when
you don't want to punish them, but you're going to punish everybody else. OK, that's fair. Says no
when
one
you're
ever.
Parents, when your dad or your mom cheats on their taxes and they get arrested, you're punished as a kid because your parent is now going to jail, but they're not going to be like, oh, you know what? We're going to keep that that parent around because, you know, we can't punish the kid.
That's not fair to the
kid. No, that's not how it works. Like the law is completely different.
As a matter of fact,
whatever.
It's like people believe it's almost like think prisoners' families deserve to be punished or something the way their families get treated. Like,
well, what kind of example does that set in the future, though, is that it's okay to cheat and we'll just be okay with it because it's like, well, we can't punish them because, you know, the kids, somebody think of the children. Won't someone think of the children? You know, so that's a very dangerous precedent going forward.
Exactly. It shows that, hey, it's okay to just cheat, you know, really, as long as you're the right people, then you're okay to cheat. And it just fosters a culture of cheating. We don't want in this country or in this sport. So let's just fucking hold people accountable. It's that simple. It's not hard. You know, I'm with you guys. We all were taught how to behave and shit, and we abide by it. We try to behave in an upstanding way because we're good people. We have a measure of personal responsibility. If you don't do that, you should be punished.
I will say this too, like this is what really just irritates the hell out of me is all these people are saying, well, what they were doing is they were doing the advanced scout for the team that they were about to play. So like the next week's team, if they were doing it for the next week's team, don't you think they were probably doing it for like every fucking team that was on their schedule? Like, come on now, like, think about that. But not only that, you literally had a guy that was under the employment of the University of Michigan that was posing as a coach to another team.
Yeah.
Like, how is this not like anything? This is beyond, you know, Spygate and bullshit. This is well beyond what, you know, Bill Belichick did. This is something completely different. You are literally, he stole a credential and was pretending to be somebody else on the sideline. Like, what? Like, but it's just ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I don't think it's even accurate to say that they were only doing the one opponent a week out, because I thought they were saying somewhere that they bought like 30 something tickets in like, I don't know, not that long of a time. So like, they're doing more than one game a week is what I'm saying. Like, I don't think they're even just doing like one day out advanced.
No, scouting. Well, 100%. I'm just talking about the public perception is that they were just doing it for 1 week out. And so everyone's like, well, okay, so yes, this is what you would do for scouting, but it's just they were stealing signs. I'm like, but they were doing this well in advance. It's not just one team that they were fucking over, you know, at a time. It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that try to say it doesn't really make that big of a difference to know what play there is being run beforehand, too. So people just say anything, I guess, to try and exonerate themselves.
Well, talk to Kurt Warner and Peyton Manning about the Patriots and see how they feel about them stealing signs. But okay. Anyways. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and head to our sign-offs here. Adam, would you like to tell the good listeners here how they can reach out to us and interact with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So as always, check us out on Facebook. We'd love to hear from all of you. You can go to facebook.com/thehometownlosers. And remember, that's spelled LOUSERS. Interact with us. We'd love to hear from you. It's really important to get the feedback from our listeners, especially if you're liking what you're hearing or if you have any comments or feedback for us. Especially, we'd love that you would interact with us. And if you're not on Facebook, I understand. Check us out on X.com, the former Twitter. That's X.com/hometownlosers. And check us out there.
Yep. Again, going off at what Adam said, if you want to see any specific content or want us to talk about anything specific, or if you have any specific questions that we can tackle, please let us know. OJ, why don't you hit us with your game of the week?
Yeah, it's going to be on Saturday at 7 p.m. You have the Boston Bruins rematch from 2019, Boston Bruins at St. Louis, 7 p.m. Saturday. So,
man,
I was thinking he was going with a total different game on Saturday at 7 p.m.
Yeah, I was about to say
he really screwed with me on that. I'm going to lose it. And I'm like, Saturday, 7 p.m. And I'm like, oh, he's going there. What? He's going to say it. And he did it. Wow.
Tell me what you thought I was going.
Wow.
We thought you were about to say the Chiefs because they're playing in
there. Yeah, they're playing that exact day at that exact time. That's why I'm like, what?
I turned the radio off anytime they start talking.
So, unfortunately, I don't think I'll be watching OJ's game of the week. Sorry, OJ. I'll probably be watching some other programming that might be on another channel. Actually, it won't be on a channel. It'll be on Peacock, but, you know.
That's the Blues game.
I got multiple TVs. I'll be watching them both.
There you go.
All righty. Well, thank you very much for the listeners. And if you are going to the Chiefs game, please stay warm as the wind chill is supposed to be negative 30. Please stay warm and safe.
Freeze out the Dolphins.
Right on all your extremities, so they had to be removed because that's what you deserve for being a fan of the Chiefs or the NFL.
OJ, calm down. All right. Anyways, so as always, I appreciate your guys' time. It's always great to talk to you guys. And we will catch you all next week here on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey, this is Josh. Thanks for checking out and tuning in to the Hometown Losers podcast. Check us out next week as we continue our silliness and talk a little bit about the St. Louis sports scene. Catch you next week.